Hello, and welcome to IRI Growth Insights, featuring IRI thought leaders, industry partners, and guests. For more than 40 years, IRI has been known for its invaluable data, but these podcasts delve into the insights the data reveal to fuel market disruption and market growth for those in the CPG, retail, healthcare, and media markets. I'm your host, Joan Driggs, coming to you from IRI's corporate headquarters in Chicago. Hello, welcome to another episode of IRI's Growth Insights podcast. Today, I'm joined by Melissa Rodriguez, Principal Client Insights Dairy here at IRI. For the past 10 years, a lot of the trends emerging in the dairy case have been the result of Greek yogurt and its big splash. Greek yogurt was the biggest disruption to the dairy case since pasteurized milk. Since then, we've seen the dairy case evolve at an increasingly rapid pace. So Melissa is going to talk to us about this disruption, and there is no better person born and raised in the Midwest, and she considers dairy to be part of her DNA. In fact, Melissa tells me there are cows in her backyard, in the backyard of her Minneapolis home. Now, I understand those belong to the farmer behind you, but still, that's a lot of cows. The past 9 years of Melissa's 14-year tenure here at IRI has been with Land O'Lakes, and she feels a deep commitment to staying on top of anything that impacts the dairy market, and she really works hard to think outside the box for clients. So, Melissa, you told me that all the turmoil and innovation we're seeing in the dairy space is the result of yogurt, mostly Greek yogurt, and I think that Faye was the first to land in the U.S., so take us back and tell us a little bit more about this.
Yeah, thanks, Joan. Happy to dive in and discuss the evolution we've seen over the last decade or so. So you're absolutely right. It started with Greek yogurt, right? I would say dairy was kind of humming along. We had very traditional offerings, right? Milk, sour cream, your typical yogurt, your big behemoth brands with lots of flavors. Maybe the biggest innovation we saw before that was light or low fat. And so when Greek came in, it sort of flipped that area of dairy, on its side. It touted potentially, higher fats and higher proteins. And these were things that people didn't really think about. It certainly didn't think about as far as their dairy consumption went. So,
and so many new brands. I mean, that was really the emergence of all those new players in this space.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So, Faye, like you said, kicked it off. Chobani is obviously one that I think we all are very well versed in. And then you had these big players start to get on board with it, right? They kind of assumed like, Greek yogurt is coming in and taking our shelf space. How can we play the game too, right? So some of these larger U.S. manufacturers have also created their own versions of Greek yogurt. And that was sort of the first phenomenon of dairy disruption that we had seen in a very long time.
Yeah, and I think that it was even that a lot of these manufacturers felt that they had their path and they really stuck to their path. And that is absolutely not the case anymore. And I really am seeing even a lot of products that are non-dairy entering this space. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so I think most consumers are likely very familiar with alternative non-dairy milks, right? Almond milk. So talk about like a disruption happening again in quick succession. So we had Greek yogurt in 2009, and probably the last, 4 to 5 years, we've seen this huge uptick in milk shelf space going to non-dairy or dairy alternative milks, anywhere from almond to coconut to cashew to run the gamut, right? It's starting to proliferate into pea protein milk. So, we're just seeing
and
tons.
And blends. There's some blends in there that are like even dairy plant-based, am I right? And and plant-based. Consumers have to be a little confused by this because we're not all, this is a new turn of events in the dairy case. How are we communicating this to consumers? Where are they getting their information?
Yeah, so I would say that it's where most of the communication is coming from now is either manufacturers highlighting the benefits of you know, whatever trend they're essentially riding at the time, whether it be Greek was all about high protein, lower sugar, you know, alternative milks are about, you know, filtration methods or being, you know, obviously lactose free, or just having, you know, other health benefits, high protein as well for almond milk. So, we're seeing a lot of that communication and education coming from the manufacturer side, but I would say we're kind of at an intersection of the reason that that need has arisen is that, consumers are becoming more aware of holistic health trends, right? Started kind of think big picture. It started with, you know, just thinking about what overall general wellness and well-being. So anywhere from, you know, the exercises that you do, how you live your life, et cetera. And that's sort of proliferating into the food that we eat. So think, you know, clean labels, food transparency. People want to know where their food came from. People want to know if it was made locally or not. And then you can tack on these health and wellness claims that we're really starting to see consumers taking note of.
And I think going back to our original thought about Greek yogurt, that really started a lot too. You know, that's when people became aware of the protein level in different products and started looking for different things. And I think it gave other companies who already had products on the market an opportunity to kind of revisit some of their attributes. Yep. And say, well, yeah, we've got that too. And wave different flags, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, you think about it, so many of these products that are touting health claims today, some of them are just inherent benefits due to the way the products are made to begin with. So it's, you know, but it's just bringing that to the forefront and tying it very directly, you know, with what we're seeing in the larger marketplace. I think one important fact, you know, that we've noticed is a lot of companies pay attention to what Whole Foods is doing, even more so since 2017 when they were acquired by Amazon. But in their 2019 Trends to Watch report, Whole Foods called out a couple of these areas, you know, so plant-based continuing to be a huge trend, gut/digestive health being sort of one to watch, right? So kind of think of, you know, we've had these like claims like protein and plant-based existing for, you know, 5-6 years or so, and then okay, what's coming next? And what we're seeing is gut health, digestive health, and then sort of lower reduced sugar, you know, or not made with artificial sweetener kind of claims popping up even more, and especially within the dairy case.
And I think, well, dairy does have a lot of, you know, there's a lot of natural sugars in dairy. So I think what I'm hearing from you is the message is going to be no added or low added sugar. Am I okay?
Yep, absolutely.
And now let's go back to some of those claims, particularly with gut health, because again, that was, you know, kind of, I think it was Activia that really banked on that and did well with that for a long time. That's Dan and Activia. But where else can some of that gut health play in the dairy case?
Yeah, so we're seeing it in milk. So lactate is a perfect example of one that has, you know, easy on the digestive claim on the package. Kefir, which is made by a key brand of that, is Lifeway Foods. So there's some probiotic drinks that are hitting the marketplace. You know, so yeah, so you're absolutely right. Dan and Activia kind of kicked it off, and they've been around for a very long time, right? You could almost say ahead of the curve. As far as digestive claims. And so now that sort of mainstream population is starting to think about, you know, gosh, my gut really does influence, you know, the rest of my body and the rest of my well-being. So it shouldn't just be that I eat a cup of yogurt every day to take care of it. You know, I have the opportunity to expand that. So within dairy, we're seeing it, you know, milks, kefir, like I said, and then some smaller pockets of growth. So very, very small, right? We're talking maybe 1 to 2 items per category, but it's showing up in sour creams. It's showing up in cream cheese. Quark is a sour type soft cheese / Greek yogurt item. And they're also boasting some gut health, you know, or healthy digestive claims. So definitely seeing it pop up. And then from a brand perspective, right, there's a lot of incubator brands that are starting to gain momentum. And we're noticing that they're kind of cornerstone of what they're offering is a yogurt item, but that they're offering a larger portfolio, right? So it's like, hey, this brand could be your gut health solution across the whole dairy aisle, right? So you think about when Greek yogurt brands came in, they offered Greek yogurt and that was it. We're starting to see a larger portfolio play with some of these brands.
Can you tell me about some of those brands that, you know, like more specifically, what brands want to be your gut health go-to?
Yeah. So Lifeway Foods that I mentioned for kefir has started to expand into some other areas within the dairy case. They've got some yogurt offerings. They started off as sort of the probiotic drink, kind of like yogurt-y type drink. And now they're offering, you know, plain yogurt. And then they're expanding too into the sour creams and other areas within dairy. So kind of thinking of soft dairy. Good Belly is another brand, and I believe they're backed by General Mills, part of General Mills Incubator. And similar concept, right? Their cornerstone is yogurt, but really hitting some of those key other dairy areas. Offering products across, you know, multiple categories.
Can you talk a little bit about some of the benefits of the plant-based products, you know, and how they're playing that up? Because again, I just see such a steep curve with these emerging brands and emerging products.
Yep. Yeah. So what we've noticed, and IRI did a survey a couple of years ago where we actually asked people who consumed not only, you know, dairy items or dairy milk, but also purchased plant-based milk or plant-based items. So kind of grounded in milk because that's where a majority of, you know, plant-based offerings started. And what we found was that people purchase the plant-based ones because of perceived health. So when you're looking at, you know, proteins per serving or potentially sugar per serving, back to what you said about the inherent sugars that exist within dairy, some of the plant-based ones don't necessarily have those higher, you know, or high-ish level of sugar. So they're able to put some of those lower sugar claims, they have higher protein. So there's a perceived health halo around the plant-based items. That we think are really driving why people buy it. Interestingly enough, though, when we asked those same people why they buy dairy milk, they said it was because of the taste. So, you know, so these plant-based items are kind of fulfilling, I would say, like a functional health need, mm-hmm. but they're not necessarily in all cases satisfying, you know, the consumer desire for something that tastes good or, you know, is exactly what they want.
And I do recall seeing some data that like the fuller fat milks, you know, 2% and full fat are on the rise.
Yeah.
And again, I think that you're right. It's the taste, it's the mouthfeel, it's that rich goodness.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So it's interesting. You mentioned that, you know, we've been touting for quite a few years now that fat is back. And it for sure started within milk, and we're seeing it, you know, in the flip of folks switching to butter back from, you know, margarine in plastic cups.
Some of us never went away.
Yeah, good. Me neither, but, you know, maybe it's a product of where I sit every day. But, you know, it's just such a, people are starting to understand, you know, they're just having a more active dialogue within themselves about what they put in their bodies. And you can put something that potentially has higher fat in your body. However, you're cutting out a lot of other ingredients, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you take some of these items and the ingredient list is salt and cream or just cream. And so, you know, you balance that with potentially some of the other, you know, health halo items.
And I do think that's one of the hurdles that plant-based products are going to wrestle with, because a lot of them have a lot of ingredients.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's really the case in the dairy case. You can talk to me about it, but mm-hmm. I know a lot of meat alternatives in particular, for now they're getting a pass, but
yeah. Yep. Yeah, we are. They for sure have a longer ingredient deck than kind of, you know, traditional dairy items. And then they're also just starting to be met, I think, with a little bit more from not necessarily the health play, but the environmental play, which is kind of what dairy has been up against for a couple of years too, right? The process for dairy has been viewed differently over the years. And that same sort of, not necessarily concern, but interest has been paid to sort of the plant-based items as well, right? To make almond milk can take a substantial more amount of water than it does to, you know, create potentially, you know, regular milk. So those things are kind of coming to light. So they'll be met with the same sort of negative energy that all trends are at some point, which is why I think we're starting to see some of those hybrids come out, right? It's got the taste of dairy, but it potentially has some of the other benefits that these, whether it be plant-based, well, for in this case, plant-based, right? Some of those benefits, but kind of mixed with the satisfaction that people have been craving or, around, you know, dairy and the taste there.
Now, do you see these as long-term trends? Is this a fad or are these trends?
Yeah, so I would say I think that they're gonna be long-term trends. I think that we can look at, you know, Greek yogurt, not necessarily. So Greek yogurt is sort of hitting its ceiling, we think, right? It's becoming the norm, I would say, right? It sort of replaced the other yogurts of, you know, the 80s and the 90s. So it's not as sort of, you know, special as it used to be, but consumption isn't necessarily going down. So it's kind of become the new mainstay within the category. And I think that we're going to see that for, like, if you take plant-based, I think that one is not going anywhere, right? The amount of consumers that purchase plant-based dairy offerings continues to rise, and I don't think that that's going to go anywhere, especially as more, you know, traditional dairy manufacturers get on board and they're actually creating their own, or they have sub-brands, or they're doing the hybrids. So, you know, I think that that's one that we'll see for a while. Gut health, I think that we're just at the start of that, right? I think that consumers are just now, in a wider sense, becoming more and more aware at the impact that your digestive health has on your overall well-being and, you know, the rest of your body. So I think that that's one that will likely be here to stay. And that one, you know, you could take it, we're talking dairy specifically here, but digestive health, you think of kombucha, sauerkraut, fermented foods. Those are things that we're just seeing gain momentum in other areas of the store. So I think that that one, you know, we've got quite a few years left before that one, you know, potentially trends downward as well.
Right. Now there is, you know, we're looking back at the emergence of Greek yogurt, which really nudged a lot of dairies to start innovating, you know, to move out of their individual lanes, if you will. But the dairy industry is going through a rough time. I mean, we just heard that Dean Foods has filed for bankruptcy.
Right.
What do you think is, like, one of the biggest barriers for dairy companies now? Like, what are they wrestling with?
Yeah, I would say that what we're noticing is that consumption under younger generations is actually down. We're not sure totally if it's because of life stage. You know, you think of the traditional path was most folks were married by a certain age. They had children by a certain age. And at those times of their life, we saw dairy consumption increase, right? More milk in the household, kids drinking milk, more butter being used because of pancakes, toast, macaroni and cheese, right? And we're not seeing those things happen as quickly as we have in previous decades. A couple hypotheses is that, you know, millennials and potentially even Gen Zers, as they're coming of age, they're either still living at home, they're in single households, they, you know, no children, potentially, you know, not partnered up. And so we're just seeing sort of, there's a delay in what that traditional household used to look like and used to fulfill the life stages as far as, you know, dairy consumption was concerned. So it's just on a slower pace. And I think even slower than people really thought. So,
well, then can I ask, because there are more single and two-person households than there are larger households, should dairy be looking at, you know, trying to market to those mm-hmm. smaller households? And maybe are there some products or packaging, probably packaging, that would really resonate? So is that kind of a big opportunity?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, it'll come down to not only is your product offering, you know, providing the convenience or the pack size or serving size that a 1 to 2 person household can consume in a timely manner. But I think it's just going to be so much more important if your products tie to the beliefs that these consumers have, right? It's no secret that the younger generations have potential skepticism as it comes to larger behemoth brands and manufacturers and organizations. And so it's going to be very critical for those to sort of tie in and tout their, you know, their brand story and why they should matter to some of the younger generations. So I think there's kind of the two prong. It matters that you have an offering that they like to begin with, or that they can see themselves consuming or using in their home. But it matters, you know, I would say even more, does your brand story resonate with who they are, you know, as a person and as a generation?
Right. And I would say, you know, these emerging brands, dairy or otherwise, anywhere in the store, they've got it built into their DNA to be more in tune, I think, with shoppers overall. They're much more purposeful. They're, again, the clean labels, you know, kind of developed for the way people think today. What they do have going for them, you know, they're smaller, is they are getting actually a lot of support from these bigger companies. You mentioned the General Mills incubator, mm-hmm. and a lot of different companies are trying to sponsor those small startups. So I think maybe that's kind of how the bigger companies are playing in that space.
Agreed. Yeah. I mean, when we look at acquisition behavior, not only within dairy, but within, you know, total food, the uptick of smaller, you know, more nimble, I would say, you know, quote unquote, cooler brands, the acquisition rates in the last 5 to 6 years have ramped up just significantly. So, you know, it's kind of the phase one, if you can't beat them, join them. And then phase two, if you're not going to be able to produce it yourself, there's a smaller company out there that's doing it, you know, so bring them into your fold, and certainly don't ignore them if you choose not to.
Right. And learn from them, you know, so that you can adapt some of those more agile methods yourself and be more purposeful. Right.
Right. And that's where we're seeing them be successful. Right. It's kind of the two-way street of the smaller brand gets the distribution benefit and the backing of these larger organizations. But larger organizations can learn how to be more nimble because, you know, they're bringing some of the smaller players into their fold. So
excellent.
Reciprocating information. And that's where we're seeing success.
Good. I love it. Hey, Melissa, I think we owe a great debt to Greek yogurt for unleashing all these traditional constraints in the dairy case. It is a very dynamic market. And I think that you've provided us a lot of things to think about and to learn from. And I hope that we can continue to have some of these conversations, some of these out-of-the-box conversations about dairy.
Yeah. Thanks, Joan. Appreciate the time.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. Please become a subscriber and let us know what you want to learn more about. We'll serve it up in a future IRI Growth Insights episode. Look for us wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to review IRI Growth Insights. Also, visit us on the web at iriworldwide.com and connect with us on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn.